Meet Jeff Ansa, founder of Elite Bodies, a fitness center in the DC metropolitan area. I sat down with Jeff to talk about what it means to be fit and what it means to think fit. I'm Sergio Gregorio. I talk to everyday people about life, personal development, and transformation. This is the Surge Experience. Welcome aboard. Jeff Ansa, welcome to the podcast. It's been really good to reconnect with you. As we were discussing before we went live, you know, I used to work out at your facility. You have a gym.
Correct.
In Silver Spring, Maryland. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came about to start your business, which is called Elite Fitness, right?
Elite Bodies.
Elite Bodies. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I got into the fitness industry, one would say, maybe it's fate. Maybe you'd say it's an accident. So growing up, the male figures in my family were very muscular. They were built. So one of the defining attributes, if you see my father, is you're going to say, oh, that's a well-built man. So, you know, as a kid, I looked up to them. Woke up, got some push-ups in. You know, try to stay fit. Fitness began to take a different meaning for me when I was in high school. I went to boarding school, and my physics teacher, he had a bench press and a couple of dumbbells, right? So after school, my friends and I, we'd go out in the back. It's not nearly any gym at all. It's, you know, it's in the back of a building with just a few equipment, and we would work out, do the bench press, get some push-ups, work our arms. So staying consistent with that and feeling that sense of pride after working out, and most importantly, beginning to get results to the point where I felt like I had a new obsession, right? And I was defining myself as a man through, you know, something that I loved. It was organic, and, you know, so that was really cool.
Where did you grow up? Where are you at boarding school?
This is in Ghana. Okay. So I'm from Ghana. I didn't come to the States until I was 18.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I came to the States for college. First year was a turbulent year for me in college, so much so I couldn't continue my education. But I walked into an LA fitness gym with a buddy of mine who was a roommate in boarding school with me. And I walked in and the manager just says, you look fit. Do you want to be a trainer? And for me at that point, I had never considered instructing people about fitness. I was more interested in, you know, just getting my friends in better shape and myself in better shape. So it was particularly opportune, that question that he asked. So I took the challenge. I got myself certified and took a job there as a trainer. I was 19 at the time. And it was 2 years of quality life experience, interacting with professionals, you know, learning how to carry conversations, learning how to motivate people, learning from other trainers, learning from what works, so to speak. So yeah, I did that for a couple of years. I rose through the ranks, became a master trainer, and then I thought to myself, I still have a potential to develop. I want more autonomy. I want to own more of my time. I want to make more. So I began dreaming about owning a gym.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, because you said you started early on almost emulating the men in your family who were very fit, very physically together. So that makes sense. So did you at that time, at a young age, decide to go into fitness at that time, or had you pursued a different track beforehand?
I did not pursue fitness as a professional. I was interested in school. I was interested in sort of the engineering sciences, pharmacy. I was very much involved in the sciences.
And how did you make the transition from the sciences to fitness?
It's the opportunity that presented itself during a year where I could not go back to school to pursue my studies. So you know, it was adapting, really came out of adapting and saying, hey, you know what? This is a time to get real world experience, learn how to get a job, deal with money, learn how to relate. And it wasn't a tough transition because fitness is something I enjoyed. And to a sense, it was empowering now to officially be somebody who does it.
So when you say the sciences, are you talking about like the hard sciences? Are you talking about things related to fitness and, you know, exercise science or pre-med even? I mean, is there a connection between what you were doing before and fitness?
I was very interested in physics, say chemistry, biology. So back home, taking an A-level course, those were my studies. Those are things I was studying more. So when I came here, that was I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to go to engineering or wanted to take pharmacy. So that first year, I was just lukewarm, you know, on what route to take. Didn't have a very narrowed sense of focus. But yeah, the fitness route turned out to be ideal for me in that moment.
So how old are you when you went into that LA Fitness? Were you what, 19, 20?
19.
Wow. Okay. And someone just saw you and said they wanted to give you an opportunity.
Yeah, they like literally said, you look fit. Do you want to be a trainer? I think they were short staffed at the time. So I was like, yes, I do.
Okay, so you started to train as a trainer for LA Fitness at a pretty young age, I would think. What was that like for you initially?
It was a maturation experience. It was quality learning experiences. I'd never been in a work environment. I'd never worked really before. So, you know, yeah, dealing with people who want, you know, who are coming in there obviously for a purpose, being able to serve them to make sure they achieve that purpose, interacting with coworkers, carrying conversations, carrying yourself a certain way. It was a maturation experience. It was quality life experience I had never had, looking back. So yeah, it helped me a lot with, you know, how to talk to people, how to listen, how to plan. It gave me quality experience.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've had my share of trainers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we always, as clients, experience what we experience from our perspective. We come in, we do some exercises, whatever, you know, and we hope better shape or whatever. But what I've noticed over the years in talking to trainers is that you all, in many ways, are counselors as well, because people bring a lot of their stuff to the gym. They're talking to you about everything, because this is, in many ways, they're not guarded. You know what I mean? They're just kind of sort of working out, but also sharing a lot. I'm wondering, did you experience that? And then how did that, if at all, contribute to your growth as a personal trainer?
That was invaluable. I mean, it was great, because people are coming to you to get in better shape, but life, of course, is multidimensional. And what you realize is fitness is an analog to life in itself, in a way. You can adapt some of the concepts that will help you be successful in fitness to virtually any other avenue of your life. So you have to know that the people that you're training, you're empowering them, not just physically, but in other areas of their life. And sometimes that's the counseling part. That's, you know, they're like, make me stronger here so I click this other avenue in my mind so I can do better also in this and that and that avenue in my life. So yeah, you get to really know people. You become friends with your clients. You know, they share a good deal of information with you. There's a trust that is built. And
again, you were very young when you started, but people were trusting you, and they're obviously sharing information with you, and you're growing. How did your training philosophy grow or develop as a result of those early experiences?
I had to find it. had to find my training philosophy. So it all comes from feedback, right? You train people initially, okay, this is what it takes to get to your goal. Okay, well, these are the exercises I've mapped out week one, week two, week three. But then what it takes to get results, it's not just the 30 minutes back then where they train you. It's really not just that. They need a voice in their head. They need everyone who comes to train wants you to convince them. They want you to make something click where they're like, ah, I got it. I can take it from here. And then they want to know that, you know, on their most difficult days, maybe they can consult you and you can say something that kind of flips it back around. So, yeah, started out of that feedback, you started to see what really works. And it's really a partnership. There has to be constant communication between the client and the trainer. It's something that, you know, it's a knob that you keep tweaking, because at every stage there's going to be a challenge that's presented. But fundamentally, I think I've arrived at this philosophy, is know thyself.
Meaning, you know, you should know yourself, or the client should know.
The clientele should, in order to achieve anything, first know yourself. Know your patterns. Know the things you do well that you probably should continue doing. Know the things that are self-sabotaging that you should do less of, and become more efficient with those processes. Know your weaknesses, know, you know, tendencies that don't contribute to progress.
Like, what are we talking about? Because every trainer I've had has always said, you know, obviously meet with me, do cardio on the side, watch your diet. And I think pretty much everyone understands that in order to get in shape, it's, you know, you have to do those things. You have to watch your diet. It's calories in, calories out, that kind of a thing. And it seems to me that people who struggle with fitness, because not everyone does. Some people go to a trainer and they just do what they need to do and they get it. But a lot of people, I imagine, plateau or struggle. It seems that there's a mental element to transforming your body physically. And it seems like a lot of people in the fitness industry and some, you know, many trainers miss that or can't really communicate that. I mean, can you speak to that at all?
I would say not only is there a mental element, I think it's central to fitness, the mental element. I mean, think about it. If you're doing an exercise and I've prescribed that you should do 10, by the eighth repetition, you're like, dude, I physically, it's burning beyond comfort. My arms don't want to do it. At that point, you have to apply some mental resistance to command your arms to help you get that two more. And you do that, so to speak, right? And hopefully, you know, pushing yourself through that discomfort, we hope it makes you better. Well, it's the same thing when you get home. You know, your fitness is really a sum of all your habits in a way, right? So if you, over the weekends, let's suppose, you know, we have a strict Monday through Friday. People do well Monday through Friday, but over the weekends, they're like, oh, it's time to relax. It's time to change my energy level a little bit. I can reach for this snack here and there. And before you realize, you've overeaten, right? It's a mental thing. Because you know that action does not contribute positively to your goals. So how do you, number one, make sure that you are well prepared to face those moments, say when it's the weekend and you go out with your friends, or you're stressed, for example. When you're stressed, you know, a lot of times it's, yo, give me this. Let me eat this just to cope with it. But you know that doesn't contribute positively to your goals. At that point, you really have to flex a mental muscle to say, hold on, I'm stressed. Okay, I'm going to breathe about it. All right, something is stimulating me to go and reach for my refrigerator or go outside and buy this and just swallow it without thinking about it, get lost in it. In the same token, if you can stay outside of yourself and analyze that process and say, I'm going to go for a bit of fresh air and walk, right? You're really overcoming that internal want to do something that would have sabotaged your fitness goals, and you trade it in for something positive. That awareness, it's all happening in between your ears. So I guess making people conscious and aware of that is important. So knowing thyself, what I was talking about is, okay, what do you do? A lot of times, you know, the weekend hits, say we do bad, then we say, go to bed and say, when Monday comes around, the process is starting. Or when New Year comes around, the process is starting. But suppose Wednesday comes around and Monday and Tuesday have beaten you down. So Wednesday, you're like, all right, I'm relaxed. You could delay that gratification for a few more days, and that would be practicing some sort of, you know, mental, some sort of restraint, and that's mental. So I guess when I say know thyself, I want people to be aware of their strengths and their vulnerabilities. Anticipate when they're going to happen. You know, if you don't prep your meals, or if you don't know what you're going to eat at 11, when, you know, you're just a little tired and you have a bit of an appetite, you might be tempted to go and eat something else. Or, you know, your body's going to want something, or your mind just can't get off having something sugary or something savory or something crunchy. But, you know, let's suppose you told yourself, hey, I know I feel this way around this time. Instead of going out to buy this, knowing that I'm going to feel like that, I'm bringing along a healthier snack with me. So when that time comes, I can replace it. So you have sort of preempted that.
I tend to think that a lot of people aren't fully aware of how each little decision, which is kind of what you're referring to, the snack, the, you know, Sunday night out at the, you know, the bar or whatever, how each individual decision affects the goal, right? And it's interesting because I used to work out with a bodybuilder. And every little thing, as you know, mattered. Every peanut, every cracker, every ounce of water. And I noticed that people who are particularly fit, you all notice, because you're in shape, you will notice on your body, or you certainly will feel it, but you may even notice if you've had a bad weekend.
Oh,
for example, if you went out and had like pizza and all the worst food 2 days in a row, you would know probably by looking at your body something went awry.
Absolutely.
Right. But the average person doesn't experience that because they haven't achieved their optimal physicality or whatever. So I'm wondering if people just aren't fully aware, if they don't have a real appreciation for the small decisions that they make and how those small decisions affect the long-term goal.
You set your goal. This is what I want. And then you have to admit to yourself that I'm not quite there. And first of all, in order to set a goal, you have to admit that there needs to be a change in order for this goal to happen. So in analyzing such change, you should be able to sit back and say, okay, this action that I do, I know it's not contributing to that goal. But when I wake up and meditate or walk, or, you know, when I lift a little bit of weight, that helps my goal. So you have to sit back. And a lot of times what we think we do and what we actually do are two different things, right? Things have become, when you ask someone to describe themselves, probably they're going to give you a lot more of the positive stuff than the negative stuff, right? So, but in our heads, we sort of carry an image of ourselves that may not necessarily reflect our habits. There's always some discrepancy there. So knowing yourself objectively, knowing what times your cravings hit, knowing when you procrastinate, knowing, you know, when you make up excuses, knowing when you binge eat, knowing what happens when your friends invite you out and they're enjoying their meals and you smell it, so you can't resist. So you just say, you know what? What is just tonight? That is a moment where your mind says, oh, it's just this one. And before you deliberate, you just reach in and just, you know, eat stuff that is not nutritious or won't contribute positively to your goal.
Yeah, interesting. Knowing thyself and knowing your friends too is very, I've learned, because I have some friends who eat a lot or think about eating often. And you know, when you hang out with people who are always thinking about food, half the conversations become about food. I mean, you can be eating a fantastic lunch, enjoying the waterfront and drinking wine and having whatever you're having, and the discussion will inevitably turn to, what should we do for dinner?
It makes sense. Food is part of our reward circuitry, right, in our minds. Food is rewarding. When you're eating, it's a pleasure response that, you know, your mind is having. So things like that can tend to also have an addictive value, right? You can overdo it.
Not everyone seems to. I've met some people who literally, and we all know them, who don't think about food. It's like you got to force them to put anything in their mouth. I have some friends who, you know, you can be spending this is the opposite. You're spending the entire day with them. You're doing all kinds of things. And then 5 p.m. hits and they're like, I think I should eat something, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like they have no, of course, they have a concept of food. They need it, but they're not thinking about it. And so much of what ends up in your mouth, what ends up on your body or whatever, it starts with what's in your thoughts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We're all conditioned differently. Mm. We're conditioned differently with food. Some people eat when they need comfort. You know, some cultures, every gathering we eat, every sports event we drink, and then we eat. You know, there are individuals, and of course there's, you know, variations between us. Some people may not be as indulgent, or they don't resort to food for comfort. Some people may do running, or people find different
avenues. Some people do drugs.
Exactly. food is a drug. Yeah, we all kind of have our different outlets, and you know, especially with food, you got to watch out for, because it's the thing that is building or tearing down your body. Is the thing that's consistently going in since you were born.
Yeah.
You have to be mindful that, I mean, if you think about your body, it's the one thing, it's a temple, right, so to speak. If you kind of want to have a reverent treatment of it, so you know, there's in the back of your mind, you should kind of want to be like, hey, I want the best going into, why don't you want the best going into your body?
Of course.
Exactly. But the best may not be the tastiest.
Yeah, no. That's for sure. I mean, I think in a perfect world, everyone would be having, you know, small balanced meals, you know, broccoli, sweet potato, chicken breast. But like you said, I mean, there are just certain experiences people form around food, and there are certain associations people have with food. Certainly, if you grow up in a family, as I did, where, you know, every holiday, every Sunday, sometimes every evening, you know, like it's a thing. And there are a lot of people from different cultures who experience that. I'm wondering, as a trainer, and I'm sure you get this a lot, people probably, your clients, talk to you about what they're eating. And there are all these different. Some of them are fad. Some of them are eating styles that have been around for a while. For example, you know, we have the keto diet. We have intermittent fasting. You have low carb. You have no carb. Small meals throughout the day. No eating after a certain hour. Like, how do you even begin to respond to all of those eating styles? Or, I mean, is there a bottom line to the approach to food that you have for your clients?
Yes and no. The yes part is we need to satisfy some nutrients. There are some things that are vital for our bodies, right? So our bodies, our macronutrients matter. We need carbohydrates, we need proteins, we need fats. We also need to watch our micronutrients, right? These are the vitamins and the minerals that we put in our bodies. Now, with all these different eating styles, you bring in, you know, the food is coming from all kinds of sources with all kinds of styles, but you want to make sure some basis is met. So I like to look at the macronutrients with respect to the goals that the person is trying to achieve. And the secondary step is some trial and error. So, you know, with some, there are pretty much infinitely many ways that you can you can eat, right? Many styles. But then we have to sort of use a trial and error approach to find what is going to work for you. If the goal is something like a weight loss, we can't skip that bottom line of
calories in, calories out.
You've heard this
energy out,
several times. We can't skip that. So we have to make sure, guess what? Whatever you're eating, that constraint is met.
Right. That's interesting because when I think about, I don't know, is it keto? Even the no carb one. I don't know if keto is one of the ones I'm thinking of where you can eat as much as you want.
Yeah, the fat.
Right.
High, very, very high fat.
And so do you subscribe to that? I mean, it sounds as if you wouldn't. I mean, is that true? I mean, some people swear by it. Like, I eat all the steaks I want, you know, and I'm good. A pound of bacon in the morning? No. That was disgusting.
Look, put it like this. I have seen, I had a friend of mine who lost a ton of weight doing keto, and he looked great, and he was as energetic as ever, and he felt great. He did put the weight back on later on, but during that period where he was on that, he was involved in it. You know, he would only order specific keto-specific snacks. He was on his deviled eggs. He was eating very...
I'm taking notes, man. I go home and make some deviled eggs.
It was a very exotic way of eating. But he lost weight and he felt good. But I was concerned. I had to look back and say it was harder to make that a lifestyle because that weight kind of ended up coming back on. So sometimes the thing with these things is they may be effective in the short term.
Yeah.
But some of them just feel unnatural and not sustainable. It looks like you can just tolerate it for a brief period, but you know, when you relapse, you relapse really hard.
Yeah.
And
you never do successfully learn how to eat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How to nourish yourself.
How to nourish yourself.
Right. There has to be some balance that is met.
All right, on that note, I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to kind of circle back and talk more about your business, and especially in light of the COVID era and all the weight gain and the stuff that people are dealing with. All right, so we'll talk about that when we come back. I got my peaches out in Georgia. Oh yeah, shit. I get my weed from California. That's that shit. I took my chick up to the north, yeah. Badass bitch. I get my light right from the source, yeah. Yeah, that's it. I see you, the way I breathe you in, it's the texture of your skin. What's up, guys? Sergio Gregorio, aka Serge here, and I have an amazing tip for you. Do you have a limited budget but want to start a podcast? Well, then Anchor is for you. The creation tools on this app will let you record and edit your podcast right from your phone, or if you prefer, from your computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast to many platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. With Anchor, you can make money from your podcast, and you don't have to have a certain number of listeners before you do. Yep. You got it. There is no threshold to meet for number of listeners. Anchor gives you everything you need to start a podcast, and it's all in one place. So, what are you waiting for? Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Jeff Ansa. And earlier in the podcast, you were talking about your business, Elite Bodies. Now, how is that going? Tell our listeners, what exactly do you do, and how is that different from your early days as a personal trainer when you were 19 at LA Fitness?
I look at Elite Bodies as a special fitness community. My chief goal is to make sure when people come in there, they have an experience that, you know, they remember. They want to feel like it makes it easier to be consistent with working out because they go to Elite Bodies. That's something our clients tell us a lot. You know, it gives them a different feel when they come to Elite Bodies. Yes, the working out aspect is going on, but there's also a soulful part, which I'm yet to investigate, but it's a constant theme I get. They feel comfortable, they feel at ease, they can relate to other customers easily, you know. The trainer is not necessarily over their shoulder barking over them, but they, you know, they're encouraging them and they want to generally do better to be consistent. So Elite Bodies, I want to make it easy for you to be consistent. I want to make you enjoy fitness. I want to give you a space where you can explore your own fitness growth. I want to give you valuable improvements, valuable contributions. I want to design programs for you that will challenge you in different ways, that will improve your strength, that will improve your endurance, that will improve the quality of your life. You know, I want you every day after you come to Elite Bodies feeling like I got better. You know, you want that. I want that experience of coming to Elite Bodies to count, not just an appearance. I want you to go, you know, having the conviction, oh yeah, that counted because I worked out today with Jeff or Feloy or Brian or Emmanuel, any one of our trainers. I feel like my day will go smoothly. I feel like I'm progressing towards my fitness goals.
Yeah, I was recently reading. There was an article that was done on your business at Silver Chips Online.
You read that by Lillian. How did you hear about
I do my research.
Wow, that's awesome.
I do my research. And in that article, you state that your business focuses on community, and that fitness requires a shift in mindset, that working out doesn't have to be a chore. You know, I thought that was interesting because, you know, I have my pastor once said, Pastor A.R. Bernard in New York Christian Cultural Center, that we don't grow in isolation. We grow in community. And I thought what you said about community was interesting, because when you think about working out, you don't think about everyone else, but you have a different sort of mindset when it comes to working out. Can you speak to that community part?
So prior to starting Elite Bodies, working at LA Fitness, I became a master trainer, and that means I could group people together and have like sessions, prescribed exercises, they go through it. And then watching the group dynamic was very interesting. People seem to have a different kind of excitement factor, a different kind of thrill factor. Provided you, the trainer, create a space that is not excessively competitive or that is considerate of everybody, that makes people work within their zones comfortably. And that's sort of going to be a vibe thing. It's going to be a human skill type of thing. Provided you create that space and you work with people where they are at, they feel good working in a group because, hey, I know I came today. Serge, see you tomorrow.
Does that work out? It's like that built-in accountability.
It's built-in accountability.
That's interesting.
It's like a classroom. You know, you go and see your friend. This guy's going to be sitting next to you tomorrow studying the same thing you're studying. Well, this person's going to be working out, doing the exercises that you're doing. It builds a different, there's a different feel to that, and people feed off that energy. And, you know, you don't want to be the one missing class. You have to go to class. This is where we all getting better. But it makes sense. We're highly social creatures, right? Mm. We've evolved that way. So
it's interesting because I'm trying to, let me see if I can paint a picture. Maybe you can paint a better picture. From what I recall, when I was working out at your studio, you do is it called circuit training? When individuals, you know, maybe one or two people are at each station, I think, and they kind of
rotate
from station to station.
Right.
And I'm wondering if I don't want to say the pressure, but yeah, kind of the pressure of having to master what you need to master in front of you for the, you know, few minutes that you're doing it. Let's say you're doing, you're lifting weights at station number 7 and you know you got to get it done in that 30 seconds or whatever. I'm wondering if the pressure of the community, the other people around you, the fact that they're watching and maybe even encouraging, if that helps in that circuit training. Does that make sense?
Yeah. As the professional, you have to sense that. You have to sense who needs your attention, who needs your guidance, and how to make someone get as much of an exercise in that stipulated period. So, you know, if I know that station 7 has 3 different levels, level 1, 2, and 3, and you're not primed to do level 3, at least successfully, it's up to me to say, well, let's try level 1 and see how you feel. So at least make you feel good at level 1. All right. Perhaps the next class or next couple of classes, you might see that same exercise. You've practiced. You have more confidence. You can do more. But the other people in their classes, their muscles are burning from they're pushing through in their own exercise. So they're not
really,
that pressure is not. Most people who come to my classes, I don't find that they feel that kind of pressure.
Like they have to perform because everyone's there.
Oh, especially, and that depends on the trainer and the vibe that you set. It's not everywhere that's going to be like that. You know, some places are by nature. But I think what sets elite bodies apart is people feel good in their skin. Feel good wherever they are. And they don't feel like they need to get to a certain level before they can come to the class. They feel like wherever you are is good. Let's build from there.
That's interesting. I remember, I have a lot of experiences, but this was at another place. It was an mostly outdoor boot camp in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I think this was one of the indoor sessions in a winter where the men, we were inside of a gym. The men would be on one side of the gym and the women would be on the other side of the gym. And all the men had to run to the side of the gym with the women. And the idea was to go as fast as you could. And I guess your partner was right across from you, way on the other side of the gym. And you would, tag them or give them a baton. I don't know what it was. And then they would go back. And so, you know, I guess it was fun, but the problem is if you can't do it or if you can't run as fast, you feel as if you're holding the team back. Well, you're holding your partner back, and then it becomes about something else other than fitness. It's something a little different. Like, would you ever do something like that? Is there value in that kind of an exercise?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we're naturally competitive a little bit, right? Everyone has a bit of competitive drive in them. Okay, you've been doing this, I've been doing this, let's see who is. But it doesn't have to be demoralizing. So long as you understand, you know, if I have a teammate who it's not doing so well, my responsibility is, okay, pick up my pace and just cheer them on. At the end of the day, we both got to work out. Your teammate also, you should feel good, you know, about the fact that your teammate also was able to work out or push through their fitness bounds. There's a sort of a moral reward with that, you know, as opposed to the to what end sometimes, right? Do we just get frustrated that I didn't win my gym classes, right?
I guess it works for some people.
Yeah, but you got to ask, like, to what end and versus the potential, you know, damage that might be caused.
Let's talk about the COVID pandemic and the effect that it had on fitness. You know, a lot of people were, obviously a lot of gyms were packed and busy, and maybe some of them are now again, but certainly before the pandemic, then the pandemic hit and we couldn't work out. together. So no more community. Gyms were closed, in fact, I think. So the virtual training really took off. How did that affect your business and your approach to fitness, if at all?
Yeah, it definitely affected us, but we had a good following, so we could transition to do, to do fitness online, at least for a period of time. And then, you know, the motivating factor and other things, people start to realize, well, if I have to work from a computer or work out from my computer, there's a period where everyone has a sort of a breaking point. But, you know, it was an up and down thing. So March, it was March 13th. Yeah, we closed our doors, transitioned to online. And, you know, I think right around July, we could actually come back indoors but there was a mask mandate.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to take a lot of precautions myself. You want to spray down every equipment, you know, as you should anyways. You know, we were wearing masks. We were sanitizing a lot, made sure we didn't share equipment, so we weren't doing that rotation style training. Mm. Everyone had a set equipment or a set space, masked up, you know, temperature checks.
You know, so much we've talked about how so much of physical fitness and training is mental. Did you notice like a palpable difference in the mental energy people were bringing to working out during that COVID, the height of the COVID pandemic?
Well, yes. First of all, I also felt it. It's not angst per se, but it's, I think everyone found it as an opportunity to, it was obviously a challenging moment. So in people wanting to adapt, they also have to bring in a new energy. People were pumped. Yes.
Really? Like pumped as in they wanted to?
Yes. They wanted to make themselves stronger. You know, everyone I spoke to virtually was in some sort of obscure place, right? So applying yourself through fitness, it was some light. I felt that energy, definitely. I felt it.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, at least for the people who were trying to... who were committed to staying fit.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe some were trying to get fit. I was reading, I can't believe it, there's a journal called Obesity.
Oh, nice.
I was reading this journal. So there was an article written in August 2022 that stated that over the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, almost 30% of people who were already obese gained more than 5% of their body weight. And 1 in 7 people gain more than 10%. And it looks like, you know, they stated that diet and exercise were factors, but people with the highest levels of stress, anxiety, and depression reported the most weight gain. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Mean, that's like a third of all. It doesn't take much to be clinically obese. There's morbidly obese, but then clinically obese means your BMI is over 30.
Yeah.
And so a third of those people who were already there, and that's not, you don't have to look huge, but got bigger during COVID.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I want to know why, though. Like, what is it? And I think what comes to mind, I'm thinking, you know, when you have an interruption in, say, your work routine and perhaps you stay home, you know, it's like I said, it's habits. You get to probably indulge in your habits more so than positive habit. The habits are not so positive. You get to probably indulge in it without the natural interactions that you would otherwise have had, you know, prior to the pandemic. So that is one interpretation. But
I can tell you why. You know, I mean, I can speak, you know, personally, but I think certainly the change in routine, right, for sure, you know, meaning, you know, obviously if you were going to the gym before, now you're not going to the gym. So there's that. Doesn't mean you can't do push-ups at home or whatever, but it does mean, you know, you don't have to you know, get in your car and go to the gym, and that when you leave your, you know, when you stop doing push-ups at home, right upstairs is the pasta. Like, there's just everything is. And then you had a lot of people, this was not necessarily my case, but a lot of, you know, parents who were home with children.
Yeah.
Parents who had to learn, you know, how to work from home and do the Zoom meetings and oversee their children who were having Zoom school, right? There were all these new things happening in people's lives that changed their routine. And then also, I think one of the biggest things was the fact that people didn't have to dress up to go to work anymore. So if you're not wearing your size 34 pants or whatever, you haven't had to put them on in a year, you may not realize they don't fit anymore. Yeah. And then, you know, so it's all of those things. I think that because this has just affected a lot of people. Even I was talking to my physician. He said that pretty much all of his clients or his patients had gained weight during the pandemic.
Yeah. It's interesting. But it depends on your circumstances, you know. But there are also people who use that as an opportunity to get in shape because now perhaps they don't have to work as much. People began working on, you know, their hobbies and getting in creative endeavors in the mornings. There's a trail near my house where I lived. You know, I'd see a lot more people. Some looked genuinely happier. And like, So the time that it bought for us in the initial phases, I think some people also, you know, saw it as an opportunity. For some people, it, based on, you know, their life circumstances. For example, you have kids who are in Zoom school. You have to take care of them. They can't concentrate, or it's a lot more difficult.
Yeah, there was definitely opportunity to do better because, you know, even though everything was being done at home, I think people had more time.
Right.
But you had to, you had to already have the perspective that sort of health is a priority, you know, and fitness is a priority, I would think. I don't think that the pandemic caused people to think, oh, this is number one in my life. You know what I mean? People were so busy, you know, worried about, you know, catching COVID, the vaccines, which eventually came down, death. Some people lost jobs because obviously if you're in the service industry and you're a server, you know, at a restaurant, you're not working. You know what I mean? So
the stress of that.
Yeah. So it seems like to a degree, fitness had to be important to you and you had to make a conscious effort and decision to prioritize it during the pandemic, which was already a very, very stressful time. What was your personal life like during the pandemic? So you're at home, wife, kids? I mean, what was going on there? I mean, did it become more stressful for you? Were you personally affected? Like, was it harder to keep in shape?
Oh, my mind state during the pandemic was everywhere. Yeah, it was a challenging time for me. It was a time in my life that it was very challenging. I have a kid, 2 years old. So, you know, I shared custody with my ex or mother. So there was one thing, just keeping that communication going. It was another thing running a business. It was another thing where, you know, when I don't move or when I kind of sit sedentary, my mind space just wanders, you know. You go into darker places and come to light places. So mentally, I had a tough time during the pandemic. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't expect you to say that.
I did. I had a tough time during the pandemic. And it wasn't just from the pressures of, say, running the business or... it was a tough time. It was a tough time. Trying to maintain balance, trying to understand the world as it is in the first place, trying to dive into some of my creative endeavors. It was difficult.
And what was most difficult for you? What is it about the pandemic itself that made it challenging for you? Was it everything kind of coming to a standstill? Was it more quiet time and having to kind of sit still and rethink through stuff? I mean, what made it more difficult?
Okay, so during the initial, I was one of the first people to catch COVID.
I didn't even think to ask you. So, did you catch COVID? Yeah.
Yeah, right. I caught COVID April 2020.
Wow. I didn't realize that. Okay.
And
were you hospitalized?
I wasn't. They didn't know necessarily what to do, but send you home with Tylenol and ibuprofen, which, you know, I was just very feverish, weak. Tylenol helped with my fever. Ibuprofen helped with a splitting headache I had. I had the 3 weakest days of my life. I was just laying down, sweating bullets, hallucinating.
Hallucinating?
Yes. So, yeah, when I had COVID, I hallucinated a lot.
I remember in the early days, I don't know that it, you know, people still hallucinate, but people described it that way.
Yeah, so I think fevers generally sometimes can make people have, you know, hallucinations. So, yeah, just breaking out of that was interesting in itself. And I had, so that was that part. I also had an outbreak. I had COVID a second time, January 2021, where this time was an outbreak at my gym.
So, wow.
You know,
was it different the second time? Was it the veracity? Was it COVID?
It was milder, but I thought it was mental. I fought my way through it. You know, I had clients who it was at my gym, and I mean, they had like about 10 people or more catch COVID from, you know, contact. That's when I realized, you know, how contagious it actually was, because there was one episode that had everybody have it. So dealing with the county and just, you know, trying to help people who'd had it, delivering food to them, making sure and praying that everybody is, all of your clients, make it safely. That was trying for sure. And it's, you know, it's one thing what really beat me mentally was, you know, when you realize you have to take responsibility for someone catching COVID at your gym and you don't know what else you could have done. So, you know, it was very difficult.
But you got through it. Everyone did you have recovered. Any significant, like, residual symptoms after the first time? Did it, like, last a long period?
No, not really. My taste kind of skewed a little bit, but it came back after less than a week. My energy level was down, but it came back after a little bit. But yeah,
that was a scary time. I spent a lot of time in New York during the height of COVID, at least a lot of weekends, because that's where I'm from. And it was a whole nother level of, I mean, it was serious everywhere, but it was obviously, that was the epicenter. And I was in Queens, and there were refrigeration trucks for dead bodies. And,
oh, man.
You know, hospitals that were, you know, people were, you know, dying all the time. Sometimes people were being turned away for treatment because they just didn't know what to do. And I remember hearing a lot about, for at least from the people that survived, about the symptoms and how different they were then than they are now. I got COVID probably 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
But it was very mild from what I hear. You know, I kind of went through a lot of symptoms, but I went through them in like 3-hour periods. So it's like coughing is the exception, but, you know, it was like fever, you know, 3-4 hours, and then headache, you know, 3-4 hours. Then I go to sleep and I wake up, I'm sneezing.
Fatigue.
Yeah. Fatigue. Oh, I'm tired from 3 to 6. But I cycled through really quickly. The only thing that was left for, it seems like, a month was the cough. And I think that's this latest strain. I forget what we call this one, but, like, and I was concerned.
BA2.
The what?
I think it's Omicron BA2.
Yeah, well, I don't know what it is, but I was literally concerned about even my ability to do podcast. I'm like, man, I'm never going to be able to do a podcast. I'm coughing. I'm going to edit out coughs. But it literally just stayed in my throat. And I can't even imagine, you know, had I not been vaccinated or had I had it when no one was vaccinated back in, you know, April 2020, what that was like. Because the way people described it was... I don't even know what does it mean to hallucinate.
I've had malaria growing up. So
okay.
If you're from Ghana, you're going to get malaria a lot of times.
Okay.
So the symptoms for me were the same. It was like, I recall this feeling before, you know. But a lot of times, you know, when you have something invade your system, those are typical immune responses that your body has. So, yeah, with that weakness, body ache, fatigue, I was like, here we go again. So I was hydrating. I was making sure to get some sunlight, stretching. But albeit I was weak, what really changed my life, what really changed where my it started breaking is when I had spicy food.
What?
You know, like, I had to be some African pepper soup. Because I couldn't eat anything, and you know, and if you can't eat, I lost my appetite. I couldn't put anything down, but spicy food really helped me, you know, recover my appetite, because then my taste buds started like... So after I had that, I could now eat more and more, and that's when it was virtually a miracle. And one of my buddies, an African guy as well, when he caught COVID, I was like, hey, bro, I know. I just bought him some food. I'm like, eat this, eat that. Couple days later, he's like, he's good. Not to say that's a remedy or anything for anybody, but please.
It's some pepper soup.
That spicy food really helped me put in more nutrients that I felt my body needed to overcome the illness. I couldn't eat. I didn't want to see food yet. I was starving and parched. But
yeah. Well, anyway, people are back. People are back at the gym. People are running again. People are, you know, we're kind of maskless pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how's that been for you now that, you know, things are kind of back to quote unquote normal?
It's been great. It feels like rebuilding. It's reminiscent of when I first started business, but it's exciting too.
You know,
there's a new energy about the whole thing. And I enjoy it. I relish it. It's like a new chapter.
A new chapter.
But it's creeping on you, right? You're still not embracing it yet. But sometimes I'm like, hey, this is where we are.
This is where we are. Well, Jeff Ansah with Elite Bodies. So for those people who want to learn more about you and follow you online, where can they find you?
So you can go to www.elitebodies.net. That's our website. Our Instagram is @elitebodies_. You can find out some information about myself, the company, and hope you check us out sometime.
All right, Jeff, well, thanks for coming onto the podcast. This has been really interesting. I've been wanting to have this conversation for some time. Thanks again.
It's been a pleasure.